Cash.
Thanks, Mike. Hi, everybody. I got to wear a few hats on this program, which was really exciting. And from structural testing to instrumentation to actually playing with rocket motors. So it was real fun.
Super.
Thanks, Cash. See that? That's what kept me alive. My lucky horseshoe. This here is my better half, Sally.
I'm HR manager at Scaled, and what Bert has really been pushing and all the guys have been pushing this week is we're looking for people. Send me your resumes. That's what I do there. I'm swamped in them, but send more because we're looking for it. Thank you.
Okay. Chuck. This is Chuck Coleman, aerobatic pilot extraordinaire, and the guy that taught us how to handle big G's and unusual attitudes in his extra 300, and one of the best pilots I know. Chuck.
Yeah, it was a real privilege. I flew with all the astronauts, 10 flights. We went up, pulled a lot of G's, making a lot of funny noises, things like that. Got to do the chasing down below 15, which was a real privilege, and I mean, being a part of history and being able to take you in to landing, that was just a highlight of my life.
Thank you, Jeff. Rick Aldrich, the guy who flew in the left seat of White Knight coming all the way from Mojave, and he's the White Knight crew chief. He's the guy who keeps us alive when we're flying White Knight.
Just thanks, Bert and Mike, for giving us the chance to work on this program. Brian, been a pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you, Rick. Jeff Price keeps the White Knight running. He works with Rick to keep the airplane going, and it really only is those two guys that keep it maintained, keep it flight-worthy, and keep it safe, and keep us safe. Thank you so much, Jeff. You got a word?
Yeah, I'd like to say I'm one of the few fortunate ones that got to work on the spaceship and the White Knight at the same time, and it was by far the pinnacle of my career, and I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
You want to introduce Tanya? Later on. Patrick, you want to say what you do and what you don't do? Look what he's got written on his shirt, for heaven's sake. Scaled guy.
It's actually, if you can't see, it's a Lancer shirt, but I have nothing to do with Lancer. I'm just helping a friend sometimes to build one. I'm one of the new guys at Scaled, and actually one of my sincerest regrets is that I wasn't able to be involved with the spaceship program, and I can only cross my fingers and wait for what's coming next.
Thanks, Patrick. Well, young man, have something to say?
Sure. Hi, I'm Joe Ruddy, and I was fortunate enough to work the Global Flyer program. Did structural design mostly, wing, fuselage, and control surfaces. And like Patrick, I can't wait to see what's next. You know, kind of had the summer off. I'm fresh and ready to go, so let's do it.
Outstanding, Joe. Thank you. Chris. Chris Weiser, been with Scaled for a long, long time, and Chris is a structural engineer beyond belief. Chris.
Bert hired me about 18 years ago because he realized he needed a mechanical engineer in addition to all that composite stuff. Didn't hurt that I was also building a long easy. And I ended up working on landing gear and systems on both aircraft, and I have to thank Bert and Mike and Brian for giving me the opportunity to fly my Voyager bell buckle to space twice.
Very cool. Very cool. Brandon. This is Brandon. Brandon's building one of the off-brand airplanes.
I'm the guy building the Legacy, the Lancer Legacy. I'm another engineer at Scaled, and I just look around mostly and watch everybody else do amazing things. And I'm really amazed by this group of people.
You're also doing amazing things, and you will do more amazing things. And, I'm sorry. Here we go. What do you got to say for yourself?
My name is Jason Krim. I'm an aerodynamicist over at Scaled, and got in a little late in the program, but Jim Tai, who's our chief aero guy, he and I bounce ideas off each other here and there. So I too am waiting for what's next. So
thanks so much. Thanks, Jason. Okay, that's just really great.
I want to introduce my wife, Tanya, who flew in with me on the spaceship, and she's the one in charge of those midnight breakthroughs, so on.
Actually, my real job is to make sure that Bert gets some good food, he gets some rest, and that he runs out to work in the morning with his shoes on, because he'll run out in his socks if I don't.
Thanks, Tanya.
This is for Bert, and I'm not sure I can quite do this without choking, which I'm doing already. From every single person at Scale Composites, just plain thank you.
Yeah, I second that. I really do. You're the man.
Now,
these are working now.
They're working now.
Okay. Is this working now? Is it working?
Yes. Okay, best I have to use this. Another reason I brought the folk up here is I want to look out into this crowd where the talent really is. And there is no place that we go to in the world anytime where we don't have a talent pool like we're looking at right now. We're in the process of building new facilities. We're in the process of buying new facilities. We're in the process of approaching some very, very interesting stuff within the next 10 years, we'll be doing several extremely interesting programs. Later on tonight, you'll learn about one of them. But I would like every one of you out there to ask yourself, if you feel that you want to join a group like this, that get together as a work, as a family, and who design and build and test things that are flown by their friends. That's important. Not something that's flown by all the test pilots in the other company, but they're flown by our friends. And safety is so very important to everything that we do that it has to be ingrained in our culture, it has to be ingrained in our attitude, and if you think you can fit into this crowd at all, get a hold of us at scaled.com. And we really need people in all areas. And I'm not going to list them because we need people in areas all the way from sweeping the floor up to doing the science in the rocket motor. And so that's my white shoes so far. Okay? Okay, we have a few minutes left, and we're going to talk to you about winning the X Prize. And what we're going to do is show you a couple of 8-minute videos, which will come on in just a few minutes. And one of them was flown by Mike, and 5 days later, one was flown by Brian. And that was kind of amazing because the first flight had some anomalies that we didn't think were real serious, but the world thought they were extremely serious. So we want to tell you that story tonight. We want to show you some action. And before we get started, though, I want to point out just some things that I think are extremely important about prizes. Not all prizes work. In fact, the stuff that the government is setting up as prizes and the stuff that DARPA did a year or two ago about the $1 million prize for a robot car, those things aren't real classic prizes like the Orteg Prize. For the Lindbergh flight, the Lindbergh that won that, or the Kramer Prize for man-powered flight. What a prize should be is to put a goal out there that you don't think somebody can do. And the folk putting the money up for it think themselves that if it were done, it's worth that to me. And they put the money up there. And then you just wait. And because that money is up there, it can draw investment, and it certainly draws inspiration, and it also draws a lot of sweat because we get a lot of fun when we win a prize. I mean, when we went to St. Louis
and I got to with Paul Allen and our team hold up that big check. It's like a golf check. It said $10 million on it. You know, the fact that we could get like 40% of the whole cost of our development program back in this one check. I mean, that was absolutely huge. But the important thing about a prize is it has to be something that they don't think you can do. It has to be something that doesn't exist, and there shouldn't be any kind of time limit on it. DARPA spent about $11 million monitoring the $1 million prize. And they monitored it to make sure that none of the people who were going after the prize took inordinate risks and did something silly like running over a desert tortoise. Now, at the very most, they should have put up an $11 million prize and limited themselves to only $1 million to monitor it. That's the way things like that should go. But anyway, we are very proud to be able to win it. Our program was not about the X Prize initially. In fact, the X Prize was not funded when Paul Allen committed the money to do this program. We kind of had it in the backs of our minds. Our goal was to fly a safe manned spaceflight with a privately developed home-built airplane. That was our goal. And on June the 21st, you know, we generally don't get that emotional on our programs. I remember getting very emotional when Mike and I flew out over the ocean in total darkness, and we saw this little strobe light going on. And we got on the radio, and we radioed to Dick and Gina, "Turn your strobe light off." And we saw that strobe light go off. And we knew right then that we were about to join up with two folk who went through hell for 9 days. And we had talked to them on the radio for 9 days, and they were heading home. You remember that, Mark. Okay? And Mike and I, in that Duchess, to this day, I can't even talk about it.
I know what you feel.
we cried like babies right then. Okay? Now, another thing that happened June 21st, there was a lot of apprehension of what we were about to do. We were about to take this little home-built airplane and leave the Earth's atmosphere with it. And we were doing this kind of in the public eye. I mean, there was 27,000 people parked outside. And I went into the spaceship just before we closed the door. I had a little chat with Mike. And I could tell that he was, first of all, he was the most experienced guy because he'd flown it the most. But I could tell he was a little nervous, a little uptight. And the last thing I said to him is, "Mike, it's just an airplane." Remember that?
I remember it very well.
Yeah, okay. And you remember when you landed and Paul Allen and I came up, they were going to mic us. They were going to put these things on us. And we decided, no, we'll go to a mic over somewhere else. Remember when we came up to you as you got out of the spaceship, and you remember that moment?
I remember it very well.
And I said, "How do you feel, Mike?" And what did you say?
I've never felt so great in all my life at that point. I really hadn't. It was absolutely overwhelming, what I'd seen, what I'd done, and all because of you allowing me to do it.
Well, the thing is, we had reached our goal. A few minutes earlier, about a half an hour earlier, we had watched the altimeter, the INS, sneak up there and just barely get over 100 kilometers. And, you know, right then we knew that our program was over. We had reached our goal. After that day, and after we kind of partied, some of us just left. We went on a Alaskan cruise within a few days, and we just took off, and we just kind of wanted to try to force ourselves to relax for the first time in 3 years. But we got back from that, and we kind of got back to work, and we kind of got focused a couple weeks later. And for our rest of the program, our sole purpose in the program was to win that prize and to get Mr. Allen that big portion of the investment of this program down, because that was that carrot that was out there. So after our goal, and several weeks after that, we went in and we worked very, very hard for only one simple goal. And you know how easy it was to focus, guys, because we knew that we had just had to fly twice within a couple weeks, and we knew it had to go high enough. And we decided to give ourselves some insurance, so we set up 3 rocket motors, not just 2. Because if we come up short on the second one, you don't want to let the first one not count. So we were ready to fly 3 flights in 2 weeks. And we flew 2 successful flights in 5 days. And in fact, Brian flew the rocket so smooth on the second one that we were able to let that rocket engine burn quite a bit later, or quite a bit longer. And we did something that Spaceship One was not even designed to do, because it's controlled by elevons and rudders. Brian flew it to Mach 3.3 at an indicated airspeed of only 20 knots. And it wasn't supposed to be controllable there, because if the rocket's burning a little bit sideways and you have 20 knots of wind on your rudders, you'll turn into a pinwheel. But as you saw, he flew out of the atmosphere so smoothly that he had to actually use the RCS to turn it up so he could get pictures where he wanted to. And you'll see that in the video.